Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, October 10th, 2019. We'll start with a story titled Elegant Evening to Help Humane Society. This is written by Mary Wyckoff in Danville. If you need an excuse to get gussied up, the Humane Society of Danville is offering its first formal fundraiser. The theme for this year's Wolfstock is Paparazzi Gala. It's fun if you want to get fancied up, Kennel Director Alyssa Julian said. However, there's no dress code, and if you don't want to put on formal clothes, that's okay too. No one will be turned away. The sixth annual fundraiser will be from 6 to 9 p.m. on Saturday at the Heron at 34 North Vermilion Street. People may come and go anytime during these hours. The $30 tickets include music, magic show, hors d'oeuvres, non-alcoholic drinks, and a chance to bid on silent auction items. People pay for the alcoholic drinks. I think this is going to be our best Wolfstock yet, said volunteer and board member Greg Bird. Our staff has really worked hard putting this together. We have a lot of nice items up for auction, good food, and a good band in a nice venue. Local blues band Cobalt will perform all evening. David Booth will do magic tricks around the room from 6 to 8 p.m. The winners of the silent auction items and a handmade quilt will be announced at 8:30 p.m. Participants don't have to be present to win. The silent auction offers a variety of baskets and certificates, such as family-sized meal from the Slotted Spoon, 3 yards of mulch from Berries, 2 season passes to the DLO Music Theater, a full detail from Carmack Car Capital, 2 color splash admissions from the Danville Art League, 2 season tickets to the Danville Symphony Orchestra, and a hot air balloon ride for two. Also, raffle tickets will be sold for a quilt made by Marion Venue, with the winner announced at 8:30 p.m. The first pull at Wolfstock will take the place of the grab bags. People will pay $10 for a cork. That cork will have a number on it, and there will be a wine with a matching number. Last year, Wolfstock raised more than $10,000. The highest amount raised was $15,000 a couple of years ago, Julian said, and she would like to meet or exceed that amount. That would be awesome, she said. Proceeds from Wolfstock are used to meet the day-to-day expenses at the shelter, such as electricity and water. The Humane Society doesn't receive any money from the city. The items used daily, such as food, are donated from but the shelter has to pay for overhead, veterinary care, employees' pay, medication, and emergencies. Some of its income is from the thrift shop. I hope a lot of people come out to have some fun with us and support our shelter, Bird said. Next story is titled DACC to Consider Buying Building. Former Army Reserve site would be used for casino classes, others. This is written by Carol Roem in Danville. The Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees will meet in special session on Friday morning to consider an offer to purchase the U.S. Army Reserve building. College officials had been working with the U.S. Department of Education earlier this year to acquire the Army Reserve Center located adjacent to northeast corner of the college's campus. The U.S. Department of Education, however, wanted the DACC to commit to one program use for the facility for 30 years, which was a requirement the Board of Trustees thought was too restrictive, DACC President Stephen Nocco said. You don't know what the labor needs of the community will be 30 years from now, Nocco said. What makes a community college so good is that it's nimble and flexible and can respond to employer needs. On Friday, the Board of Trustees will consider purchasing the Army Reserve Center at 2408 East Main Street outright for $150,000. That's lower than the appraised value for the facility, Nocco said. There are a lot of big ticket items or repairs there. The government kept up the place. Now that the city of Danville selected a casino operator last week to develop a casino and resort south of Interstate 74 and Lynch Road, Nocco envisions part of the Army Reserve Center being used for casino employee training programs, similar to ones at Illinois Central College in Peoria near Paradise Casino and Atlantic Cape Community College in Mays Landing in New Jersey, which has been supporting nine casinos with specialized training since 1977. We would work with the casino operator and resort owners to find out their needs, Nako said. They're going to need culinary arts and security people. We're on East Main, less than a mile from the site. Some of the courses that could be taught would include how to repair slot machines, how to operate the machines, and how to deal cards, as well as personal enrichment classes that would teach students how to play the games and learn some of the strategies, he said. ICC in Peoria receives casino equipment and support from Paradise to train the casino's future employees, Nako said. The Army Reserve Center, which was built in 1958, has been vacant since 2010. The property consists of two buildings on a 3.5-acre lot. The administrative office building is two stories and 22,878 square feet. The garage storage building is one story and 4,356 square feet. Before it would become a casino training center, the facility would be used for some of the college's immediate needs. With the two buildings, there will be places for immediate use, and then we would phase into in the other parts, Nako said. An immediate need is forklift training, and we have an immediate need for a storage facility. Two workforce development programs, forklift and semi-trailer truck training, would begin there first. The facility's back lot and loading dock would be used for the forklift training program, which would free up space for the semi-trailer tractor program to take place in the lot in front of the Julius W. Hegler II Advanced Technology Center. Nako said the semi-trailer tractor program now takes place at the Steel Grip building. We can't produce enough drivers, he said. The businesses in our area are clamoring for people with those skills. Another one of DACC's immediate needs is for an indoor storage area, which has been on a state funding wish list at a cost of $1.2 million for new construction. The Army Reserve Center would accommodate DACC's storage needs, he said. Nako said the criminal justice program would move to the facility by fall of 2020, and a fully functioning shooting range in the middle of one of the buildings could be used to teach gun safety. Next story is titled Business Advice, DACC Session Links Owners to Resources. And this is written by Carol Rome in Danville, and there is a picture of Terry Gord, barber and owner of A Plus Cuts in Danville on the right, talks with Diana Altharo from Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunities Office of Minority Economic Empowerment during Wednesday's Minority Business Expo at Danville Area Community College. 19 minority and female business owners had the opportunity Wednesday to access resources that will help them grow their business and showcase what they have to offer. Carla Boyd, DACC Assistant Vice President of Student Services, said she was pleased in the turnout for the first-time event that took place at Danville Area Community College's Mary Miller Complex. We have 19 small business owners who have signed up, she said. Whoever is in the room today was meant to be there. We're making connections. State Representative Mike Moran, Republican from Fithian, sponsored the event that was coordinated by the college's Office of Diversity. Moran said he hatched the idea of business for the business fair after talking with people in the community and realizing there was a need for such an event to help link social small business owners to state resources. For at least an hour Wednesday morning, business owners visited informational tables manned by various state agencies and interacted with representatives to learn more about resources that could help their business. I came here for answers and resources, Brianna Vaughn, owner of Brianna's Creations in Danville, said. My dream is to have a commercial kitchen built onto my home, she said. I love to bake. I'm here to figure out what resources and what grants are available to take my business to the next level, she said. Hopefully, I'll get that push. Terry Gard, a barber and owner of A Plus Cuts in Danville, talked for a while to Diana Alfaro from Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunities Office of Minority Economic Empowerment. "I think it's a great opportunity for people," he said, of the event. "It's generous of them bringing the resources to us." During the event, Moran recognized the business owners in attendance, followed by a business resource presentation by Moran and Alfaro. The last 2 hours of the expo were open to DACC students and community members so they could visit tables set by the business owners who displayed their products and services. "I didn't know we had these businesses in Danville," Boyd said, looking around the gymnasium. "It's awesome to meet these budding entrepreneurs. We want to the entire community to know about them." The expo was open to all minority and female-owned businesses in Moran's 104th district. Moran said he would like the expo to become an annual event. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries, and there's only a couple today. Gardner Daniel Bowers, 80, of Vetersburg, Indiana, passed away at 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 9th, at his residence, surrounded by his loving family, and is now in his presence. Visitation will be from noon to 2 p.m. EDT time Saturday, October 12th at First Baptist Church, 515 6th Street, Covington, Indiana. Service at 2 p.m. EDT time at the church with Pastor Andy Harkelrod officiating. Interment will follow at Mount Hope Cemetery in Covington. In lieu of flowers and gifts, please consider a donation to First Baptist Church Benevolence Fund. And Charlotte L. Johnson, 79, of Catlin, departed from this life at 4 a.m. Tuesday, October 8th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, Illinois. Funeral services at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 12th at Catlin Church of Christ with Pastor Kevin Cox officiating. Burial at Oak Ridge Cemetery in Catlin. Visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, October 11th at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. In lieu of flowers, memorials to Catlin Historical Society. Okay, the next story is titled Illinois State Police, Fatal Four-Vehicle Accident Under Investigation. Danville man died of injuries he sustained. This is written by a Noel McGee in Georgetown. Illinois State Police are still investigating a multi-vehicle accident Wednesday north of Georgetown that killed a Danville man and seriously injured his 7-year-old passenger. Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden identified the man as 29-year-old Tyler J. Pope. The four-vehicle accident, which injured two other drivers, occurred at 7:47 a.m. on Illinois 1 at County Road 900 North between Georgetown and Westville. It involved a 2013 red Ford Focus driven by the Danville man, a 2019 red Toyota Camry driven by a 40-year-old Oakwood man, a 2015 black GMC Sierra driven by a 59-year-old Covington, Indiana man, and a 2006 silver Chevrolet Equinox driven by a 20-year-old Georgetown man. According to the preliminary crash investigation, the Ford driven by Mr. Pope's and the Toyota and GMC were traveling south on Illinois 1 while the Chevy was heading north. The Ford hit the GMC in the rear, then crossed over into the northbound lanes and struck the Chevy head-on. The report said Mr. Pope and his young male passenger, also of Danville, were taken by ambulance to an area hospital with life-threatening injuries. The drivers of the Toyota and Chevy were taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Police said all of the drivers and passengers were wearing seat belts. The accident closed parts of Illinois 1 until about 2:30 p.m. Motorists were asked to take alternate routes while police, emergency personnel, and others attended to the victims, cleared the scene, and investigated. Okay, and the next story is titled Parks Livestock Expansion, Meeting Tonight on Proposed Hog Site. This is written by Tracy Crane in Ridge Farm. A livestock company with local roots hopes to continue its expansion of hog facilities with a new site near Ridge Farm and three more in Iroquois County. Parks Livestock, which started near Danville and now operates across multiple states, in late July applied to the Illinois Department of Agriculture for permits to build a 34,400 square foot hog finishing facility outside Ridge Farm. The application said it would house up to 4,500 swine. Officials with the Ag Department are holding a public information meeting to discuss the proposed facility from 6 to 8 p.m. today at the David S. Palmer Arena at 100 West Main Street in Danville. Agriculture's Krista Lisser said the department is required to notify county officials of any plans for hog facilities over a certain size, and either the county or its registered voters can request an informational meeting. In this case, she said Vermilion County officials requested the meeting. Similar informational meetings were held last month in Iroquois County concerning Parks' plans to build three hog facilities near Stockland, each with the capacity to house up to 4,500 swine. Parks Livestock opened similar but larger facilities in 2018 just north of Fithian. David James, Special Projects Coordinator with Parks, said the project southwest of Rich Farm would be smaller than either of the two Fithian area sites, which each have two double-roomed hog barns. The Rich Farm facility would have a single two-room barn, James said. The facility would be built on land owned by Rich Farm area farmers Alan and Lisa Chestnut, who said they would use the resulting manure to fertilize their crops. In a fact sheet about the project provided by Parks Livestock officials, Alan Chestnut said they are looking for an organic source of fertilizer to make their family farm more sustainable and self-sufficient, and they have seen an advantage using manure from the pigs that their four boys have raised. The three proposed Stockland facilities would also have one two-room barn on each site, according to James. Parks would own the facilities built on farm-owned ground and partner with the Equity and Effingham-based agriculture cooperative that provides the facilities with newly weaned pigs to raise. Hogs raised at the existing Fithian area facilities are shipped to a Tyson Foods plant in Logansport, Indiana, for processing. The Equity, which opened a $16 million livestock feed mill more than a year ago south of Chrisman, northern Edgar County, would also supply the feed and veterinary care to the four proposed hog finishing facilities. It's the same arrangement used at the two Parks Living livestock sites north of Fithian and another hog finishing facility that opened in 2017 several miles west of Rossville. James said the feed mill south of Chrisman is definitely the driver behind this expansion in East Central Illinois, and it relies on locally grown crops. Annually, hogs raised at the Ridge Farm facility could consume an estimated 100,000 to 120,000 bushels of corn and 3,000 to 4,000 bushels of soybean meal, officials said. The facility would have computer-controlled ventilation, and the manure would be stored underneath by a concrete reservoir several feet deep, according to Parks. The manure would be pumped once a year to fertilize 300 to 400 acres of nearby cropland in a method that injects the manure a few inches into the soil, according to Parks officials, who explained that the facilities would be built according to the state's Livestock Management Facilities Act, which includes requirements to protect groundwater. Tonight's meeting is part of the State Agriculture Department's review process before approval. The four proposed facilities won't be able to move forward with construction until they receive that approval. At the Ridge Farm operation alone, the investment in buildings, equipment, and hogs would be $1.2 million to $1.4 million, according to Parks officials. Carrie Winkie, Executive Director of the Vermilion County Farm Bureau, said that as long as the new facility near Ridge Farm meets all state requirements, the Farm Bureau is very supportive of this project, which would also help grain farmers in the region whose crops are used to supply animals' feed. Okay, it's kind of a slow news day today, so I'm just going to pick random articles here. This is from the Associated Press, written by Mark Kennedy. Sesame Street tackles addiction crisis, and this is out of New York. Sesame Street is taking a new step to try to help kids navigate life in America. It's tackling the opioid crisis. Sesame Workshop is exploring the backstory of Carly, a bright green, yellow-haired friend of Elmo's whose mother is battling addiction. The initiative is part of the Sesame Street and Communities resource available online. Sesame Street creators said they turned to the issue of addiction since data shows 5.7 million children under the age of 11 live in households with a parent with substance use disorder. There's nothing else out there that addresses substance abuse for young kids. From their perspective, said Karma Einhorn, a senior content manager with Sesame Workshop. It's also a chance to model to adults a way to explain what they're going through to the kids and to offer simple strategies to cope. Even a parent at their most vulnerable, at the worst of their struggle, can take one thing away when they watch it with their kids. Then that serves the purpose, Einhorn said. This summer in Manhattan, the Associated Press looked at as puppeteers, producers, and show creators crammed into a small studio in the nonprofit's Manhattan headquarters to tape some of the upcoming segments. Carly, voiced and manipulated by puppeteer Haley Jenkins, was joined by a young girl, 10-year-old Celia Woodbury, whose parents are in recovery. "Hi, it's me, Carly. I'm here with my friend Celia. Both of our parents have had the same problem, addiction," Carly told the camera. "My mom and dad told me that addiction is a sickness," Celia said. "Yeah, excuse me, yeah, a sickness that makes people feel like they have to take drugs or drink alcohol to feel okay. My mom was having a hard time with addiction, and I felt like my family was the only one going through it. But now I've met so many other kids like us, it makes me feel like we're not alone," the puppet continued. "Right, we're not alone," Celia responded, "and it's okay to open up to people about our feelings." In the segment, Carly and Celia each hold up hand-drawn pictures of flowers with multiple petals representing big feelings like anger, sadness, and happiness. They offer ways to feel better, including art and breathing exercises. The segment leans on carefully considered language. Creators prefer addiction to substance abuse and recovery to sobriety because those terms are clearer to children. Despite the subject, the mood was light in the room, largely thanks to Jenkins's calm and empathic manner. "I know it feels awkward because people don't normally have conversations standing shoulder to shoulder," she told Celia. "This is weird, but trust me, it looks good." Carly had already been introduced as a puppet in foster care earlier this year, but viewers now will understand why her mother had to go away for a while. The introduction of her backstory follows other attempts by entertainment companies to explore the issues of addiction, including The Conners on ABC's and Euphoria on HBO. The online-only segments with Carly and Celia are augmented with ones that feature Elmo's dad, Louie, explaining that addiction is a sickness, and Carly telling Elmo and Chris about her mom's special adult meetings and her own kids' ones. Carly also opens up about her family to Abby Cadaby in another segment, and Carly tells Elmo about how she mistakenly used to feel like her mom's addiction was her fault. Carly, Elmo, Rosita, and Abby Cadaby also sing "We're Special and So Are You." Viewers are referred to free online resources in both English and Spanish that include videos, storybooks, digital interactives, and games. Children's therapist Jerry Moe, the national director of the Hazelden Betty Ford Children's Program, helped craft the segments and resources, saying he was grateful to help since there's such a paucity of resources for the preschool age group. Okay, even though I'm really a Cubs fan, I'll read the Cardinals story. Cards oust Braves with a 10-run first. This is written by Paul Newberry from the Associated Press in Atlanta. With a stunning outburst their first time up, the St. Louis Cardinals scored 10 runs for the biggest opening inning in postseason history and dealt the Atlanta Braves another playoff heartbreak with a 13-1 rout in decisive Game 5 of the National League Division Series on Wednesday. Before many fans had reached their seats, the Cardinals were already booking their plans for the National League Championship Series, where they will face either the Los Angeles Dodgers or the Washington Nationals in a best-of-seven set beginning Friday. Those teams were meeting in their own Game 5 at Dodger Stadium. It will be St. Louis's first NLCS trip since 2014. For the Braves, it might take a while to get over this debacle. After pitching seven scoreless innings in Game 2 when Mike Fulnewicz retired only one hitter before getting yanked, first baseman Freddie Freeman made a crucial error that might have limited the damage. The Cardinals scored their final run of the inning on a strikeout, a wild pitch in the dirt that skipped away from catcher Brian McMahon. It was Atlanta's 10th straight postseason round loss since its last victory 18 long years ago, tying the ignominious mark set by the Chicago Cubs between 1908 and 2003. St. Louis leadoff man Dexter Fowler batted three times before the bottom of the Atlanta's order got its first looks, and the Cardinals made several changes after their 10th spot in what might have been the first set of defensive changes ever made by a team before its opponent had battled. There was no need to worry about any more offense with Jack Flaherty on the mound coming off one of the great second halves by a starting pitcher in baseball history. The 23-year-old right-hander had not given up more than three runs in 15 starts after the All-Star break, posting a .91 ERA. He certainly wasn't going to let this massive lead get away, though Josh Donaldson, in perhaps his final game with the Braves, gave the fans a brief reason to cheer in a 13-0 game when he homered over the center field wall in the fourth. Manager Mike Schilt let Flaherty throw 104 pitches over six innings, surrendering four hits and that lone run for the first postseason win of his blossoming career. Flaherty loaded the bases in the fifth after drilling Ronald Acuna Jr. with a fastball, but induced an inning-ending ground out from Freeman. This one, though, will long be remembered for what happened before Flaherty even took the mound. Okay, we'll run through the community briefs. In Danville, learn about fungi. Retired teacher and writer Sam Van Camp will discuss why fungi are plentiful this time of year and the role they play in our environment from 6 to 7 p.m. on October 15th at the Danville Public Library with Vermilion County Master Gardeners. The program is free. Registration is requested, so there are enough handouts. Register at https://go.illinois.edu. Fall fungi program, or call the Vermilion County Extension Office at 442-8615. Hot Dog Roast, the 23rd Annual City of Danville Halloween Hot Dog and Marshmallow Roast will be from 5 to 9 p.m. on October 25th. The event, sponsored by the Comeback Committee and the City, will be at the Wilbur Atkinson Softball Field at Carver Park. The public can enjoy hot dogs, chips, pop, and treats for children. Parents are responsible for their children. Rain date is October 27th. And in Hoopston, the number of grandparents today who are raising or helping to raise their grandchildren continues to rise. For many, it's more difficult to parent the second time around. Hoopston Public Library will sponsor a free program, Parenting Again, at 10 a.m. on October 16th by Chelsea Byers of the University of Illinois Extension. This program is open to area residents. For information, call the library at 283-6711. Okay, so that'll be it for today, Thursday, October 10th, 2019. Looks like it's going to get a little chilly this weekend, get a little rain, so try to stay warm. Make sure you check that furnace out before it gets too cold. Anyway, I hope you all have a good week, and hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.